Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
The Weekend Warrior, every Saturday morning from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m.
on ESPN LA 710.
Dedicated to you, the fan who works hard all week and slugs it out on the court, the field, the big box store, and the honey-do list all weekend long. And helping you cope as you come to the realization you're not 19 any longer. Here's board-certified orthopedic surgeon Dr. Robert Clapper.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Thanks for tuning in each and every Saturday and telling all your friends. Can't believe it's been 9 years. I got to stop saying I don't know what I'm doing anymore, because after 9 years of doing it, I guess I must be doing something right. But it really is a treat. I work hard all week, and I really look forward to getting up Saturday mornings to be with you. And I appreciate the kind words that I get from Twitter, seeing you in the office, and just hearing you guys on the phone when you call in. The number is 877-710-ESPN. My guest coming up at 8:15 is Dr. Trent Acosta, who's a pediatric orthopedic surgeon at Cedars. And I'm so excited to talk to her, because kids are not adults. They're not adults in every way. The maturity is not there. They're still growing. And if they break their leg or they tear their ACL, you can't just willy-nilly go and operate on them. You've got to respect the fact that they're still growing. And the injury itself could absolutely screw up the way they grow on that leg, so that one leg grows at a different length than another. This is not a good thing. So it made me think all week of the questions that I wanted to ask her, so that you'll all benefit. But where do you see these issues in the worlds that I love of art, music, sports? Where do you see those similar issues where you mistakenly treat a kid like they're an adult and you mess up the growth plate? You mess up the growth of that kid, that they really don't get to be an adult. Where does it work well, and where is it a disaster? Well, it worked well for LeBron James in sports, and we'll get into that in a second. And it worked well in music for little Stevie Wonder, who as a 13-year-old was already one of the greatest singer-songwriters for Motown. Berry Gordy knew what he had in Stevie Wonder. But Stevie Wonder also had something else. He had someone being able to guide him as a kid and treat him as a kid and gently have him be coachable to grow into a beautiful, talented adult. But there was a singer in the 50s who didn't have that blessing. He grew up in Harlem in New York. His name was Frankie Lyman. Frankie Lyman, at 13 years old, had the number one hit in America, "Why Do Fools Fall in Love." Rebecca, let's listen to Frankie Lyman singing that song. He worked in a grocery store and could hear through the doors of the grocery store the guys getting together on the corner singing. It was called doo-wop. And Frankie Lyman said, I got to get out of this grocery store. That's what I want to do. His energy, his voice propelled him to the number one song in America. Listen to Frankie Lyman sing "Why Do Fools Fall in Love." Can you imagine this 13-year-old kid leading this band, writing the songs? It's all coming at him so fast. He couldn't take it. And at age 25, dies of a heroin overdose, because he doesn't have the correct coaching to protect him. LeBron James had his mom, Gloria James, and we're going to hear from her in a minute. But Frankie Lyman didn't. I want to take you through Frankie Lyman's career, though, the good and the bad. Let's go first to Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers, "Why Do Fools," 1 through 6. This is from their first TV appearance. in 1956 with the number one song. Listen to him being interviewed by Alan Freed.
But now we come to a mood that is the product of our present generation. The bubbling enthusiasm of our teenagers was the inspiration for what is now the most popular style of music in the country, the rock and roll. A few short weeks ago, five teenage boys went into a recording studio, and they said they had a song they wanted to sing. Well, it took a little time, 3 weeks to be exact, but they were heard, and their song was recorded. It is now the number one record in America. And the song is, Why Do Fools Fall in Love with Boys and Call Themselves the Teenagers? You guys are the teenagers.
That's right, Mr. Lane.
Come on, boys, let's sing our song then.
That's a lot of you?
Yes, sir, can we sing now?
What's your hurry?
I have to make my money before my voice changes.
News for you, Dad, it ain't gonna go much lower. You're in a barrel now. Frankie, you amaze me. Tell me something. You're only 13 years old, and yet you wrote this big hit. How did it ever happen?
Well, Mr. Lane, one day I was dressing, and an inspiration came to me, so I wrote the song.
Oh. Well, what was the inspiration?
I needed a new suit.
Well, that's a pretty good reason. But I can't understand how you could write Why Do Fools Fall in Love. What does a 13-year-old boy know about love?
Well, Mr. Lane, I've been falling in love since I was only five.
Five?
But I've been a fool about it since I was 11.
Well, don't complain, lad. You've only had two rough years. I think we've had enough of this little chit-chat. This is your first nationwide television appearance, isn't it?
That's right, sir.
And I know that everybody's waiting to hear you sing, so are you ready to rock and roll it?
That's right.
That means I ought to get lost, huh?
About it.
Now I want you to hear from their appearance on the number one show in America in the 50s. It was called Rock and Roll Party. This was with Alan Freed. But then you're going to hear from the record producer, Richard Barrett, about how talented Frankie Lyman was and how they took advantage of this young kid not knowing the contracts he was signing, not knowing that he really was just a kid and not an adult. And this led to his depression and his ultimate demise at age 25, dying of a heroin overdose. But let's listen to him on the Rock and Roll Party in the 1950s with Alan Freed. 1 through 4.
I don't know what I can say about this next act. What can you say but sensational? All over the world. Frankie Lyman, a 13-year-old youngster with a great way with a song, and the Teenager.
Baby, baby.
Baby, baby, how I want you. Baby, baby, how I need you. Baby,
bursting
baby, you're the only one. 2, 3, 4.
See him so tiny on a stage, bursting with so much talent. Was something that was really spectacular.
I'm so glad you wanted me too.
He was just a natural born talent. He was born for the stage. And it only lasted a short time, which will plague me the rest of my life.
We all grew up in New York City in the early 50s. We all hung out together. We went to school together. And we sang together. At that time, singing on the street corners was the thing to do. it was a way to get noticed. And one day we did.
There would be a time in his later years when he would have been able to understand what he was doing and what his worth was, but nobody was going to stop and tell him then. They were too busy taking his money from him. Who's going to tell you what you're worth if they're putting it in your pocket, in their own pockets? You follow me? This is the story of Frankie and the group.
You know, this is where a kid is treated like an adult with no guidance. You treat a fracture in a kid like it's an adult, and you can do a lot more damage than the fracture. In the world of sports, there is a beautiful story. LeBron James. LeBron James, junior year in high school, already was setting all kinds of records. Already was getting approached with shoe contracts. People knew what was going on. There was rumors he was going to leave high school early. But there was someone in his life who put their foot down who said, no, he's just a kid. Leave him alone. He's going to finish high school. That's early enough for him to go to the NBA. He ain't leaving in the middle of high school. And you know who that person was? Gloria James, LeBron's mom. Let's listen to 16-year-old LeBron James, pre-junior year, 1-3.
James enters his last 2 years of high school as the top prospect in the nation.
I don't want nobody to pass me. I mean, they say I'm the best player in the country, and I wanted to keep it that way for the next 2 years.
I always knew he was going to be good. I got to admit, never knew it was going to get this big, though.
James spent the summer showcasing his talents at various camps throughout the United States, but attracted nationwide attention for his dominating performance in mid-July at the ABCD camp in New Jersey.
I just wanted to play my game. My game is I can score, but I can pass too, and I can rebound. I can do so many things that can help my team win, and that's what I did.
It was also during that camp that stories began to surface about James hoping to become the first to leave high school early and turn pro. But as he prepares to enter his junior season here at St. Vincent St. Mary, he and his mother decided to set the record straight.
To squash it all, he's going to finish high school. Everything is coming fast enough. There's no need to rush it.
I never considered that. You know, it wasn't even the thought. You know, you really can't even do that. I don't want to go through that. I want to graduate with my class. I got three best friends, Drew, Willie, and Shion. And high school you can't come back to. And, you know, prom you can't come back to. I talked to Tracy McGrady when I was in New Jersey, and he just told me a lot of things that just inspired me. Like, when you get out on the court, you got no friends. And, you know, when I get out on the court, you know, sometimes I underestimate who I'm playing against because they might be on the same level as me. But he told me that it don't matter who you're playing, you just got to kill them. And, you know, that's what I'm coming into the year next year with. And, you know, whoever we play, I'm coming out to get them.
Listen to LeBron James giving his mom credit for bringing him up right. Let's listen to, at 16 years old, LeBron James.
You know, every day you got to go out there and work because there's someone out there working too. And if you stop, I think they can pass you up. So every day, my coaches push me. I push myself and my teammates push me. My mother brought me up real good. And it's pretty easy because the way I was brought up, she taught me so much things besides basketball. And that helps me be level-headed.
That's exactly right, LeBron. How about 2001? He's interviewed by Kirk Herbstreit, who was the quarterback at Ohio State. He's dreaming that LeBron will come and play football at Ohio State, let alone basketball. LeBron James ain't going to college. LeBron James doesn't need college. LeBron James, fortunately, has a mom who's his rock of Gibraltar, raising him right, so he can go right from high school to the NBA. Let's listen to that.
As far as college basketball, is that something you've been asked probably 6,000 times? Let's say this is your senior year, 2 years from now, and you and I are sitting down talking. What do you think it's going to come down to?
You know, I don't know. I just got to, when it comes, I just got to sit down with my coach and sit down with my mom and see what's the best option. You know, should I make this move or should I make that move? But right now, I don't know too much. I'm just happy, so happy right now. You know, we just won a state championship. And when that role comes, we'll cross.
Now LeBron signs a $90 million shoe deal right out of high school with Nike. He's drafted number one by the Cleveland Cavaliers. He's a teenager. But listen to this interview. you'll hear what he's talking about. He's telling you what the future's going to be. It sounds like LeBron James as a 35-year-old, but he's actually still a teenager. He is special. Let's listen to that 1-6.
There's no pressure. There's no pressure at all. I've been getting pressure since I was 10 years old. I don't think there's no pressure for me because I'm doing something that I love to do. And that's play the game of basketball. I'm doing the same thing that y'all love to do. And that's y'all like to watch me play basketball. If I ask y'all that question, y'all going to say the same thing. I mean, is there any pressure to ask me these questions? It's no pressure because y'all know how to do what y'all do, right? Well, you know, I never say myself. I always say my team. It's not about myself. It's just about how well as a team we can grow as a family and just get better every single day. Because the other teams out there is getting better every day. And if we take one step backwards, we're going to end up like we was this year. And we don't want that to happen again. Well, I hope I can put a lot of smiles back on the people's faces in Cleveland. You know, the baseball team is going through a transition right now. And basketball team, you know, football team is really starting to kick in now. And I hope, you know, the basketball team, y'all gonna be excited about coming to the games. I'm not going to guarantee no championship, I'll tell you that. I'm guarantee that we get better every day. And that's the thing that you guys don't see. That comes from practice. Sometimes you have practice, but sometimes you're not. I just know that we're going to get better every day, and we're going to be a lot better team than last year. I can guarantee that. You know, they be your friend until you get on the team. I just hope that they accept me for who I am as a basketball player and especially as a person. You know, I'm not coming into the team right away trying to be a leader. But if they get that to me, I know how to be a leader. But I'm just going to accept my role until I have to do something, you know. But I'm just going to just try to get our team better every day. Physically, be ready. I just feel, I don't know. It's no different for me. I know how to play the game of basketball. Not saying that to be cocky. I think I know how to play the game of basketball, and I don't change my game when I'm playing against anyone. I'm just looking forward to seeing who's going to be our coach. If there's going to be Keith Smart going to stay, or we're going to get somebody in there, because as soon as we get a new coach, as soon as I'll be able to get a good relationship with him.
That's what he's all about, is relationships. But it starts from the upbringing and the great job his mother, Gloria James, did. When you don't have a Gloria James and you're Frankie Lyman, you get into trouble. Kids are not young adults. You get into trouble when you treat them that way. And that's the message. It's fun dealing with maturity. And you think the kid is going to burst. But you know what? They may sound good, but they still need guidance. That fracture may look like, hey, we can just treat that with just a splint. Nope. You better put it in a cast because you are affecting the growth plate. In art, in sports, and in surgery, you get into trouble when you treat the kid like they are an adult, which they're not. All right, coming up next, I cannot wait to talk to her. The great Dr. Trent Acosta, a pediatric orthopedic surgeon at Cedars, and we're going to learn about the intricacies of how to treat and think about when an injury occurs and that skeleton, that bone is still growing, the unique features of being a pediatric orthopedic surgeon. Coming up next on the Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
Check this out. Weekend Warrior is on the air.
From the epicenter of sports in the Southland.
ESPN LA 710. With Dr. Robert Clapper, board-certified orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai Health Associates.
I was sitting in my classroom a couple of days.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Kids are not young adults, and nobody knows that better than my next guest, the great Dr. Natasha Trent Acosta. Thanks so much for getting up early to be with us. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. So let's let the listeners learn why Cedars is so proud of you and where you come from. What did your dad do for a living, and how did you pick orthopedic surgery of all things to go into in life? Take us back to the beginning, Natasha.
Sure. I grew up, similar to yourself, back in New York. I actually grew up on Staten Island. Mm-hmm. And both my parents were actually surgeons. They were both OBGYN. So I sort of grew up around that a surgical specialty. And growing up, I always liked biology. I always liked using my hands. So, you know, when I went to college, I went to Brown for undergrad and tried to distract myself from other stuff, economics and art history. But ended up actually loving the sciences, doing all the pre-med requirements, went to med school. And just that summer prior to med school, I did an internship at the hospital special surgery with Dr. Hannafin and Schubenstein and Callahan. And that's actually where my love of orthopedics fell, where I fell in love with it. It was an amazing experience, and not only that, seeing, you know, these strong women in orthopedics. So that was my first experience with orthopedics, which is not the typical
right.
orthopedic surgeon. You're talking about, you know, 6% female in orthopedic surgery.
Wow.
You know, I was seeing them every day that summer. And that's what I knew, and it happened, you know, they have a sports clinic. So I was seeing sports injuries, and I was a former athlete, played softball, ran track, did track and field. So it was this natural inclination, you know, toward helping athletes get better, get back into the game that attracted me to ortho. And it's a fun specialty. So
it is a fun specialty, and special surgery is where I trained. 84 to 88, I was there. Joe Hannafin she just got there a little bit after I left, but what a tremendous orthopedic surgeon and mind she is for women in sports, and her whole angle of looking at orthopedics. You need someone like her to kind of smack the guys up on the head to realize, hey, we're different, and good for you. You learn from the best. That's fantastic. I want the audience to understand that it is different. You don't want to be telling a kid that they sprained their ankle or sprained their wrist or their elbow, because the weaker structure in an adult, it's the ligament, but in a kid who's still growing, weaker than the ligament is the growth plate. Teach us a little bit about what you look for when you have a kid with pain and swelling in a joint and the x-rays are negative. What goes through your mind?
Sure. Like you've been saying, kids are not small adults, and one of those features is the presence of those growth plates. And the growth plates are how those bones get longer. So until they stop growing in their teenage years, that is present there. You know, lots of times, yes, we get x-rays and we can see a fracture line, whether it's above, below, or going into that growth plate. But sometimes that's just not present. But there could still be an injury at that area. That area of the growth plate, because it's not calcified, because it's cartilage. Cartilage cannot be seen on an x-ray. There is a high suspicion that always runs through my mind of an injury through a growth plate. If they're tender in that area when we're, if I press on it, if they're swollen in that area. So most doctors will make the assumption that there is an injury through the growth plate and treat it as such because of that. An MRI is usually not necessary, but if an MRI does get done, you will see the injury on an MRI.
Mm-hmm. In an adult, you break your bone, We see what used to be one piece now in two pieces.
Yeah.
But in kids, uniquely to the growing skeleton, you have something called a green stick fracture. Teach us a little bit about what that means.
So, the green stick fracture is a common thing that I will see in kids, often most times in the forearms. And so as opposed to adults whose, like you were mentioning, their bones are more brittle when we get older. You know, you break the bone, one piece goes in one direction, the other piece goes in the other direction. In kids, their bones could be a little bit more plastic. So they see the same forces that an adult sees, but maybe that fracture doesn't exactly break the bone on all of those walls, those cortices, where one piece is going in one direction, the other one's going in the other. There's still an attachment, but a bend to the bone. And so that's when the doctors are calling it a green stick fracture. That's what we're talking about.
Got it. I bet you must get asked all the time with the helicopter parents that we have nowadays, how tall will my child be? How do you answer that? What do you look for? Do you look at their pelvis? Do you look at the growth at the knee? teach us about what your mindset is about how to answer that question. How tall will my child be?
It's a good question, especially when we start talking about growth plate injuries to parents in the office. I often get that question. And in terms of their final height, a lot of it is genetics. You know, it depends on, you know, how tall mom is and how tall dad is. But, you know, there are markers that we can use. One of the traditional ones is getting a wrist x-ray in terms of seeing how much growth a child still has left. There's growth plates that we see throughout the wrist and the hand bones that give us a sense of, is this child an early bloomer or a late bloomer? Does their age, their chronological age of 14 match what their bones look like? We usually say girls stop growing around 14 and boys stop growing around 16. But, you know, as we know, that varies, from person to person. So, I usually can give parents an idea of, you know, how many more years of growth a child has. And that's important for me too, especially when there's an injury around a growth plate, because I can never tell how badly a growth plate is injured on an x-ray. I could just warn that this may be injured and we need to watch it until it stops growing. Mm-hmm. Because an injured growth plate can lead to a closed growth plate or a partially closed growth plate, which can lead to abnormalities in that growth of that bone. Either it gets shorter or it turns at a certain angle because of the injury to that growth plate. And so I particularly use, that system of checking how much longer a child has to grow in order to tell how much longer we need to watch that injury post-healing.
I'm talking to Dr. Natasha Trentacosta, someone Cedars-Sinai is so proud of. She's a pediatric orthopedic surgeon, and kids are not young adults. You really need a whole separate specialty to treat them differently. Natasha, I'm so old that when I was training, they beat us over the head that whenever you're taking care of a kid, someone's still growing, make sure you take an x-ray of the other side. If it's their elbow that hurts on the right side, you better get an x-ray of the side that doesn't hurt, because the subtleties that you may think are a fracture actually is just normal for this kid. Now in the world of MRIs at your convenience that maybe we didn't have in the 80s and 90s, do you just go right to an MRI, or do you find it still helpful to take an x-ray of the other joint that's normal?
It's a good question. It's still very helpful. I use it in the office, and I know a lot of urgent care and pediatricians will use it in the office as well. It really does, especially, you know, when we're talking about joints like the elbow, where you have a lot of these small growth plates or apophyses in that elbow that I think people who are used to seeing a fully mature elbow, you know, will assume that this is a fracture. It helps to compare. You can see differences in the size of what looks like that growth plate to see if something moved in that injured elbow. And it's quicker, you know, they're in the office, you're able to get it, you know, relatively, you know, inexpensive, you know, and treat them right away, as opposed to the MRI that can often take longer, waiting for approvals and getting that scheduled. And it's a longer study.
Got it. All right. I want to definitely get into something that you're really passionate about that's in your wheelhouse, which is the difference between boys versus girls, women and injuries, as well as pediatrics. And uniquely to that will be the ACL. I really want to go into a little bit more detail with you for that. And if it's okay with you, can you hang on the line? I just want to do another segment with you.
No problem.
Okay, great. We'll pay some bills. Coming up next, we're going to get into when a kid tears their ACL and why do more girls have ACL injuries than boys. We got an expert, Dr. Trentacosta, coming up next on the Weekend Warrior Show here on 710 ESPN.
Check this out.
Weekend Warrior is on the air.
From the epicenter of sports in the Southland.
ESPN LA 7710. With Dr. Robert Clapper, board-certified orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai Health Associates.
Welcome back, Weekend Warrior. Such a treat to be joined by someone so smart and capable, the great Dr. Trentacosta, an expert in pediatric orthopedic surgery. So, Natasha, I just want to ask you, why do we see so many more ACL tears in girls versus boys? All of the risk factors, pelvis being wider, is there a hormonal aspect? Is it the way the notch is shaped? Take us through your opinion of why three times, four times more ACL tears are seen in girls than in boys.
It's a great question. It's something that, you know, I see often in the office is, you know, especially being here in LA in Southern California, the adolescent female soccer player coming in with an ACL injury. Lots of research has gone into this in terms of why are we seeing this in these adolescent females more than their male counterparts. Like you mentioned, there's anatomical issues. There's the pelvis size contributing to the alignment of their lower extremities, of their legs. Females tend to be more knock-kneed, which can put them at risk. Of course, that's something that we can't change. That's how, you know, that's how they develop. There's within the knee, the notch size, like you were saying, that space where that ACL is passing through tends to be smaller. The ACL itself tends to be smaller, probably because of that notch being smaller. There's also, yes, hormonal differences that come out during those adolescent years. This is definitely an area of more ongoing research. We haven't quite figured out which are the protective hormones, and it's something that I'm actually working with at Cedars in the coming years is trying to figure out and better elucidate which hormones and which ones may be protective. You know, maybe we can, you know, alter mm-hmm. and help prevent ACL injuries with over the counter, you know, or oral contraceptive pills or something like that. And then there's the one that probably gets the most you know, interest and seems to be very important is the neuromuscular control and the biomechanics of females, the way that they land from a jump in basketball or volleyball, the way that they stop mm-hmm. and cut and change directions in soccer. The way women tend to do it, girls tend to do it compared to their men, is they tend to have a straighter knee, which is not protective when they're landing from a jump. They tend to have that knee fall into that knock-kneed or what mm-hmm. we call a valgus position when they're changing directions or stopping or slowing down in soccer. And that seems to put that ACL and put a lot of force right across that ACL at that moment, which can lead to it just rupturing. And because of that, we have, you know, we've developed programs to try to help alter or improve the neuromuscular control of all athletes. And so that's where a lot of
research. You know, Dr. Bert Mandelbaum's a good.
Yes.
Dr. Bert Mandelbaum's a good friend of mine. He's been on the show a couple of times, a true trailblazer in orthopedics, and I know you spent some time with him. Tell us briefly, got about a minute left, of some of the exercises that he's come up with to help prevent an ACL tear, particularly in girls and young soccer players. What if you could describe, what would be some of those exercises that a young girl could do to help her prevent tearing her ACL without contact?
Yes, Dr. Mandelbaum and Holly Silvers, they developed a very successful program, the PEP program, P-E-P, that is meant to be implemented 2 to 3 times a week for drills. And it focuses on specifically running drills, strengthening exercises for the gluteal muscles, which help protect the knee, the core. All of keeping that strong helps improve the alignment. Plyometric work, agility mm-hmm. exercises, and especially stretching and flexibility. The idea is, and I tell, you know, I always show this to patients and give this to patients in post-ACL reconstruction. You know, it's about getting stronger in that post-ACL, you know, rehab state, but it's also about preventing the same injury from happening again or having it on the other knee.
Mm-hmm.
So having, mm-hmm. you know, very strong gluteal muscles, working on building up those hamstring muscles as well, and watching. I always tell the especially the female athletes that are following an ACL reconstruction is doing these exercises in the mirror, you know, you're at a gym, you're in a physical therapy location. It's a lot easier to do it there, but even at home, watching the alignment of their lower extremities, having the hip aligned over the knee, over the ankle, all in line so that that knee is not falling into that valgus or knock knee position when they're doing squats or single leg squats or exercises of that nature.
So fascinating. Is there a particular area of interest that you have in pediatrics? Is it the spine, the hand, the elbow, the knee? Where is it?
I love it all. You know, I don't do much spine, but or any for that matter. Mm-hmm. There are doctors for that, but particularly the knee is a passion of mine. It's what I had started, you know, researching back when I was, you know, at HSS, looking into ACL injuries in females and particularly adolescent females. So that's always been, you know, a passion of mine. But I sort of see everything, you know, wrist injuries, shoulder injuries, elbow injuries, ankle fractures, ankle, you know, sprains, like we talked about earlier. So, but the knee is definitely.
Well, Natasha, we are lucky at Cedars to have someone like you with a particular interest, who recognizes the difference between girls and boys and has a passion for kids who are still, or I should say, skeletons that are still growing, kids, knowing to treat them differently than adults. I want to thank you so much for making time to be with us this morning. It was really, really educational.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, pleasure. All right, that's the great Dr. Natasha Trentacosta from Cedars-Sinai. Coming up next, the number is 877-710-ESPN. The clinic will be open. And I got to tell you what I've discovered about a new kind of pepper that I put on my salad, which makes it feel like I'm back in a delicatessen in New York. I'll explain coming up next on the Weekend Warrior Show here on 710-ESPN.
Check this out. Weekend Warrior is on the air.
From the epicenter of sports in the Southland.
ESPN LA 710. With Dr. Robert Clapper, board-certified orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai Health Associates.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. I've been watching so many games from Louisiana State University, LSU. But I've been going back and watching this whole past season because this story of the quarterback who's going to be the number one guy chosen in the draft coming up, his name is Joe Burrow. You talk about a Cinderella story about a guy who was put on the bench and nobody thought he had any talent to then become probably the greatest college quarterback of all time, who's going to now be rookie of the year this year in the NFL if they ever start playing for the Cincinnati Bengals. Oh, we'll get into that. And as far as the pepper, my guest next Saturday is going to be Micah Wexler from Wexler's Deli, because I can't wait to talk to him about this new find I have. And it's, you know, you've heard me talk about shredding the garlic, kosher salt, red wine vinegar for my favorite salad to eat. But here's the kicker, the secret ingredient: white pepper. I didn't even know there was something called white pepper. You try that on your salad. You don't have to put a lot, just a little. The subtlety of that pepper, I got to learn more about it. But I can tell you, Second Avenue Deli in New York, that's what's in their health salad. I discovered that by getting their cookbook. White pepper. I can't wait to ask Michael Wexler next week as my guest, a guy who really has taken over Los Angeles with his deli where he smokes his own fish. My mouth is watering already. The locks that he creates is the best locks you'll ever have in your life. That'll be next Saturday. Right now, let's take a call. Let's go to Charlene. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Oh, good morning, doctor. Thank you so much.
Good morning, Charlene. How young are you?
Oh, I'm 79.
Yeah. When's your big birthday?
In August.
Are you a Leo?
Yep.
Me too. People who follow this stuff go, of course, Leo, Dr. Clapper. It makes all the sense in the world. I have no idea what my birthday has to do with my personality, but I guess some people are just fascinated by that.
I know. It was very popular years ago, all that astrology stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. What did you do for a living? I assume you're retired. What did you do for a living?
Yes, well, I was a language teacher, and then I was an interpreter.
What language was your specialty?
French and Spanish.
Wow. You know what my favorite word in Spanish is?
No.
I'm going to ask you, how do you say in Spanish the word for wife?
Wife? Esposa.
Wife. That's yes. Right. All right. You're an interpreter in Spanish. Now I want you to tell me what the Spanish word is for when the police arrest you and put handcuffs.
Yes.
That's right. This is why I love Spanish, because the word for wife and the word for handcuffs is the same word.
I know. That is funny. Yes.
How about in French? Is it the same thing in French? What's the French word for wife?
Just the word woman, femme.
And what is the word for handcuffs?
Ooh, that I don't know.
Where are you from? Where did you grow up?
In L.A.
In L.A. What high school did you go to?
Garfield.
So you're 79 years old. You went to Garfield High School. What exactly was Los Angeles like when you were a kid, a teenager?
Oh, oh, it was so different. You know, it wasn't so built up, spread out, and all that. Far fewer suburbs. I lived in a suburb that was about 8 miles east of downtown L.A. Well, that's where Garfield is.
Wow.
And so already that section of L.A. was, I would say, 90% Hispanic. And my high school was also predominantly Hispanic, which was great for me because I learned
Spanish. Yeah, because you loved language.
Yeah, I loved
What did Spanish. Your father do for a living?
He was an artist.
No, he made a living as an artist.
Yes, Well, he called himself a commercial artist, not a fine artist. But then he was also very interested in training animals from a young age, and he got work training animals. A friend of his had a company that supplied animals for feature films and for TV, and he left the art and went to doing that animal training, animal handling for. He worked on the Lassie shows.
I just was going to ask you, did he work with Lassie, this giant collie?
Well, Lassie was owned by one man, and he worked his own dogs. He had more than one. The Lassie you see is not the same dog every time, but identical.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He had several identical dogs, and so that didn't put the pressure all just on one dog. And then my dad worked with other animals. My dad was a bird specialist, but he got off into chimpanzees and all kinds of other things, too. Yeah.
Are you telling me that you came home from school one day and a monkey was running around the living room?
No, but when I came home from school, there were birds, lots of birds. and he trained birds of prey. We had a...
Like red-tailed hawks?
Oh, yes. So we had a large garage. It was a very old house, so the garage was very old. It was like a barn, and he had an eagle, an owl, several hawks,
Fultons before the peregrines became protected. That was his favorite bird, the peregrine falcon. And
what did he feed the? What did he feed these birds?
Chicks.
So he had chickens making chickens. Eggs. They became chicks, and they were food for the birds.
Yeah, and he would go and buy horse meat and feed them chunks of horse meat. And during the war, when meat was rationed, I was a little girl, you see, and mm-hmm. he got USDA grade horse meat. We ate horse meat all during the war.
Oh, my God. You're incredible. You have any children?
I have two girls, uh-huh.
And grandchildren?
Oh, yes, five.
Wow, what a full, beautiful life you've had. All right, tell me how I can help you, Charlene.
Okay, well, my sport is gardening. And I'm squeezing those garden clippers all the time. I suppose that's what's caused this. Especially the little finger and the next finger are just, when I close my hand, it's so painful I can't do any clipping anymore. The pain, it's not in the thumb or the index finger. It seems to be on the outside of the hand, and then it sometimes goes up the forearm, maybe 8 inches or so, but no pain in the elbow, no pain in the shoulder, and I just don't know.
Is there any numbness or tingling or just pain?
Well, if I hold something like a pencil for a long time, because I'm right-handed, then my hand goes numb. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there are three nerves, just three. There aren't five. There aren't two. There's three nerves. They're like electrical wires that feed the wrist and hand and fingers. One of the nerves is called the median nerve, and it allows you to make an okay sign. All the muscles that are needed in your hand and fingers to make an okay sign, they come from this one nerve, and that is the famous carpal tunnel nerve. There's a second nerve that feeds the area that you're having trouble with, the little finger and the ring finger. That nerve is called the ulnar nerve, and that nerve wraps around your elbow. That's the funny bone nerve that you hit sometimes and causes tingling. And the third and final nerve that feeds your hand, that allows you to extend your wrist to hold a pruning shears or to hold a can of soda, that is the radial nerve. Yes, you're 79. I'm sure you have arthritis, and there's all kinds of, as we call it at Cedars, altacarditis that you got going on. But the first place that you need to look at where you absolutely can continue to garden and be helped is, we got to figure out, is the nerve, the ulnar nerve or the median nerve, being choked, causing this to happen? And it's really easy to figure it out, because you do a test, an electrical test called a nerve conduction EMG. That's what you're going to need as your first step. But what I want to do with you first is get you, literally, no pun intended, into the hands of a good hand surgeon to help you. So you have a pencil. You're going to write these names down. I'm going to give you the name of two colleagues of mine at Cedars who are terrific, and they will take good care of you and get you back into the garden, because their specialty is hands. One is named Dr. Tsai, T-S-A-I, and the other is named Dr. Kulber, K-U-L-B-E-R. I want you to call. They're on the line at Cedars. You can look them up. Both of them are excellent, and I need you to see them, and then you're going to tell me how it all went. Okay, Charlene?
Okay, great. You spoke about your wife working in the blood bank.
Yes.
And she's involved in making serum for our pandemic?
Yes, she is. She's a true hero.
There's going to be enough of that serum to go around.
There is. Don't worry. We're going to be here to take care of you, Charlene. And thanks so much for calling. I really appreciate it. God bless you. All right, Warriors. I leave you with Volare. Until next week, I'll see you on the radio.